Hey everyone, this is Derek Bros with the Conscious Resistance Network and The Last American Vagabond. And today I'm bringing you another interview with Kate Talley, who is a survivor of ritualistic sexual abuse, also a whistleblower of sorts. You might have seen my recent interview, the first interview with Kate. It was an article on thelastamericanvagabond.com and the video interview, which you can find at theconsciousresistance.com. And in that first interview, Kate describes how she came to know the recently arrested, disgraced, former therapist David Hamblin, who was arrested in Utah as part of an ongoing investigation by the Utah County Sheriff's Office into what they called ritualized child sexual abuse. That this started in May 31st, and it's been ongoing. I've been covering it for the last few months. So Kate came forward and she shared her story of knowing David Hamblin in part one. And in this interview that you're about to see, Kate now shares for the first time ever her own story of abuse within her family and within the LDS, the Mormon Church, and everything that she experienced. So please listen with an open mind, open ears, open heart, and share this information if you can. If you have information to share related to this topic, please feel free to reach out to me. And I encourage anyone who might have been abused or knows anything about this to listen to what Kate has to say and know that we are trying to get to the bottom, trying to get the truth exposed as much as possible. So thank you guys for your time. Please enjoy this interview. Kate, welcome back. Thank you for being with me again to share your story. Let's go ahead and let's just dive right in. I know you have much to share about abuse that you suffered as a child and how that relates to the Mormon Church and, you know, your family. I'm going to let you take it from here. Where do you want to start?
Maybe one thing that would be good for me to share, just a tiny little background about my family. Both my parents, my mom and my dad, had ancestors that came west with the pioneers, the Mormon pioneers from Nauvoo. And they were kind of a little bit of like the who's who of Mormon pioneers. On my dad's side of the family, my dad's mother was a direct descendant of the man who started the University of Utah. And my dad's father, who's the one that was abusive to me, my main abuser, him and his friends and the cult group that he met with. He was the son of a doctor in the little town of Richfield, Utah. They were friends, you know. They were friends with the leaders of the church when the church was being organized. You know, my dad's there's a little museum type thing in the town of Richfield where it tells about Dr. Anderson and his life there and how he served the pioneers of Utah. And, you know, on my dad's mother's side, is where the leader of, or I'm sorry, the guy who started, the University of Utah, his name was Orson Spencer, and his daughter was somebody who started the Primary Organization, which is an organization for children, like a Sunday school and children organization. So on my dad's side, that's kind of where I come from, like Mormon pioneer stock. And on my mom's side is the same thing. You know, there's actually a picture in the Smithsonian Institute Museum of my mom's ancestors and a broom factory that they opened in the town of Spanish Fork. And then another of my mom's ancestors, his name was Alexander McCrae, and his home that he built is part of the tour that everybody goes to see in Nauvoo, in the town of Nauvoo. So I grew up with like this really strong, rich pioneer history that we were really, you know, we were proud of, and had been taught about the Mormon Church and the founders. And so I kind of, you know, I grew up being really proud of my roots and where I was from. And I grew up, you know, seeing all the songs and marching in the parades and all of that about Utah and the founding of Utah and the pioneers and stuff. So if you don't mind, that's a little bit of a an introduction that might help people understand where I'm coming from with that.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that history, Kate. I just want to mention, you know, for those who don't know, because I've only learned in the last few months as I've been doing my investigations into this, you know, ritualized sexual abuse investigation in Utah, that for one, you know, the founding of Utah and the families coming there, but also the way that the Mormon Church gained political power and continues to wield political power and influence, not just in the United States, but in different parts of the world.
Power and the culture here in the American West too, not just in Utah, but in all of the American West. You know, it was the Mormons who discovered gold in California in 1849, and it was also you know, the culture that came west with the pioneers still kind of reverberates today in the American West. You know, they're really independent people, they're really hardworking. You know, there's a lot of really good things that followed and came with the Mormon Church settling that area. There's also some things that are a little bit difficult, like their distrust for the federal government. It's a big, you know, it's kind of a big complicated story, but some people don't really understand that the founders of the Mormon Church and the early prophets really had a big part in the development of the social climate and the political climate and just the all around atmosphere of the American West, and it's still alive today.
So tell us more about your own family and how your family relates to the early days of Mormonism.
Thank you for that. I want to give that a little bit of that background. So I grew up I was born into a really good, hardworking LDS family, Mormon family on both sides, my mom and my dad both, in the town of Payson, where I was born, and that's where I was raised. That's where my abuse was also. My grandfather, he was a pharmacist. He owned a pharmacy in the little town of Payson. And he also owned one in Springville. He was a veteran of the Army Special Forces in the Korean War. And also, as far as I know, I don't have tons of information on this because I don't really have anyone to talk to. It's just kind of been my own research and putting it together. But it's my belief that he was trained and with the special forces in the military in the MKUltra program. So I'm letting you know that because I feel like it's important to understand that a lot of the abuses that I suffered were kind of high grade, you know, military grade abuse, and not just sexual abuse, but in some cases actual torture. I'm not exactly sure when my grandfather got involved with an organized cult ring. But I know he was a Mason, and that he also, that he did participate in those, in that organized, satanic cult activity that I believe has existed since the very beginning of the founding of the church. Joseph Smith was also a master Mason, and the Mormon Church temple ceremonies are very, very similar to the ceremonies that they do in the Masonic lodges. So that was a part of my abuse. You know, the cult meetings. Also, I was abused by him, you know, privately in our home. Or not my home necessarily, in his home when we would visit. So I had a lot of abuse happen on holidays or you know, times that families get together, or times where we had sleepovers at my grandparents' house. You know, like if my parents were going away for their anniversary or that sort of thing. You know, I think all pedophiles are opportunists, so they will manipulate others. So there were times when I was staying with sisters of my dad's in Salt Lake City, and they were manipulated to and they brought us to Payson to grandma and grandpa's house, and that's when abuse would occur.
So I want to make it clear again that this is the first time Kate is choosing to share her story, and you know, we appreciate that and respect you coming forward, Kate. And I know you have information to share that you might want to share in the future, but for now, I know that you're also ready to reveal some of the things that you've experienced and some of the things that you've been through. So let's just start to get into it. I know, you know, this relates to your grandfather. Was your grandfather a member of the LDS?
But I believe that his father, the doctor in Richfield that I talked about, joined the church, or maybe his parents did. I'm not quite sure. But my grandpa was born into the Mormon church. And, you know, they were his family of origin, they're down in Richfield. They were an affluent family. My great grandfather was a doctor, like I shared, and my great grandmother was actually a very talented musician. She sang with a group called the Singing Mothers, who had a radio program. I believe it was during World War II, and it was like a nationally syndicated radio station where they would the mothers of people of sons serving, or I guess daughters too, serving in the war would sing patriotic songs, and it was something that was shared all over the United States. And so my grandpa was born in the Mormon church, and so was my grandma. She was from a little town called Orderville in Utah, which kind of has a fascinating history too that you might hear a little bit about. But I know from family history, from speaking with members of my family, that my grandfather was also abused. He was abused, and so was his brother. They were, and I think his sisters too. They were abused by somebody that was in the church. I'm not exactly sure it was. I think it was a music teacher or a piano teacher. So one of the reasons I'm speaking up about this is because this is an ancestral trauma problem that's passed down in families, and it's passed down in the Mormon church, and I think all churches kind of a lot. There's a lot of secrets and a lot of shame. So he was a member of the church. My grandma was a member of the church. On my mom's side, they were all members of the church. I don't think that my grandma and grandpa, my dad's parents, and my grandpa, who was my abuser, I don't think they stayed super active. They were married in the Salt Lake LDS Temple, but I don't, they didn't stay active members. They're kind of what you would consider at the time people called Jack Mormons.
So Kate, was this abuse that you said started at 2 years old, was this consistent all the way to 11 when your grandfather died? Or, you know, did you have, you know, periods where he didn't abuse you? Could you tell us any more about that period, if you don't mind?
So it was consistent abuse. Pretty much every time we saw our grandparents, it was consistent abuse. But we didn't live right next door or anything. At the time we lived, I lived with my parents and my sisters in Salt Lake City while my dad was going to the University of Utah. So it wasn't a daily abuse type thing. It was when we got together for holidays or celebrations or that sort of thing that it would happen. And then also, you know, I do have memories of being taken to cult rituals. At that time, during that time period, you know, when I was as a child between the ages of 2 and 11.
Kate, if you're comfortable, Would you mind sharing with us a little bit about where you were taken? And you've also mentioned, networks, groups of people involved in this abuse. Were these people who were just friends of your grandfather, or were they members of the church as well? What can you share about that?
Sure. So I was also abused by friends of my grandfather's in a like in a kind of a formal ritual setting, but also in a more relaxed type of setting. He had a drugstore, and his friends would come in. They would come in and hang out, and it was one of those old time drugstores where they had a soda fountain in the bar, and they'd come in and have a Coke and talk and stuff like that. And I remember, his friends making comments about me and about my sister sometimes, about, kind of like inappropriate, actually very inappropriate, sexual comments about us. So I know that some of the abuse with his friends happened in like a relaxed one-on-one type situation. We kind of, he kind of like I was kind of like loaned out to his cronies, but also there were times that it happened in an organized ritual situation, and those happened usually somewhere kind of rural or in a canyon type situation in Utah County. They were in at night, and in there were certain places that they were meet, which I believe it was people's property, like people who are were members of the cult ring. It was part of their property. A farm I remember being taken to one time, a place in the canyons and a couple towns in Utah County, I remember being taken to. And that's where the organized satanic ritual abuse would happen.
So you've told me this before, just to kind of paint a clearer picture for folks who are hearing this, you were drugged beforehand. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was drugged beforehand. So my grandfather was a he was a pharmacist. So and laws and the way that they really paid attention to controlled substances were a lot more relaxed back then. So from the time I was just a really little kid, I was drugged to be quiet or compliant, and that was a big part of my abuse. And that's something that actually went further. For me, and this is something that I didn't speak about in my first interview with you, because I wasn't really sure if it was relevant. But I've been thinking about it since then, and I think I'm hoping that if I share my story, that it might be helpful to other people. But later in my life, I had a problem with prescription with pharmaceuticals, and that actually came kind of into play with my abuse from David Hamblin, and he actually asked me to to go to the doctor and get medication, and Hamblin did. So it was hard. From a young age, I was drugged to make me like compliant, I guess, and complacent. And then it later in life, when I had some horrible physical problems. I was very sick. I turned to pharmaceutical drugs to numb my emotional pain, and that didn't work out well. It never does. But I'm proud of myself. I'm very proud of myself for I got help for that. I went to a really good treatment center, and it's been several years since I've had a need to, to numb my emotional pain. I've learned ways to deal with it that are healthy. But along, it, you know, it, I know that that played a part in me reaching for something or anything to numb my pain. I went from, as a young child and a teenager, I would exercise and swim or ride my bicycle or run. And as a young adult, you know, I numbed my pain with running for a while. I have definitely had trouble with eating my feelings. You know, that's something that I've really had an issue with, but I'm really proud of myself. I've come a long way, and I've healed. You know, I've been able to heal from the need to do anything to not be present with my pain.
Yeah, Kate, you know, I'm proud of you. I know we've only met each other recently, but seriously, I understand. You know, I understand the struggles of dealing with addiction and struggles in different ways. And unfortunately, when it does come to people who've been abused, those rates go up of drug abuse and suicide and depression and things like that. So very proud of you for turning your life around and for all the, you know, just being such a strong person right now in this moment. So again, I want to emphasize that the abuse ended at 11 years old, but that's for a very specific reason. It's because your grandfather died, right? And I know that's after that is when you started to speak up. What can you tell us about that process of you choosing, deciding to come forward and voice your abuse that took place to you and share that with your family and trying to get help for this, you know, the pain you were dealing with?
Yeah. So no, it ended just after my 11th birthday. My 11th birthday was the last time that he sexually abused me. And it was pretty bad. I was having a birthday party at his house. He lived in a condominium in Salt Lake City, and we were all going swimming. And when I was just this, you know, a little 11-year-old girl, I went in my room, like his guest room in his condominium to put my little swimsuit on. And he came in and he raped me. He anally raped me. And I remember I was angry with him, and I was upset with him, and I turned to him and before he left the room, and I said, I hate you, and I hope you die. And I'm certainly not responsible for him dying, I don't think, but it was only, I think, like a month later, he died of a heart attack after that. And not too long after that, one of my dad's sisters, my aunt, she was the first adult that came forward and said that she had been struggling and seeing a therapist, and that he had sexually abused her. And so when my parents told me that, I said, I know he did that to me too. And so that's when it all came out. Before that, it wasn't talked about at all. Nobody knew about it until he died.
So, Kate, when you started to speak up, did you have full memories of everything that had happened to you, the ritualistic elements, the group setting, all that? Or was it more like an awareness that you had been abused by your grandfather, and then over time you came to remember, become aware of that? Could you tell us about that? Like, just, I guess, the process of recalling all of the things you've been through.
Well, so at first when I told my parents, I didn't tell them very many details. That's something that I think is common when survivors of sexual abuse come forward. They don't, you know, they don't share everything, you know, all at once. I told them that he had molested me, but I didn't really share a lot of details on that until much later. And you know, we went to I think I told you in my last video that my parents were really amazing. They did everything they could within their power to get us help. We did like people are taught to do in the church. We went to our bishop. Our bishop was also really, really compassionate and really kind. And he referred us to LDS Social Services, where we went, my sister and I, because when I spoke up, my sister, she said, that happened to me too, you know? So I remember going to, it was like at BYU campus in Provo, Utah. We went to a psychologist that worked for LDS Social Services, and we had a meeting with, or we had an appointment with him. I had one by myself, and then my sister and I had one together. And during our session together, this psychologist actually he asked my sister, do you think that really happened to you, or are you wanting to get some attention like Katie's getting right now? So my poor sister, the first time she went to a psychologist for help was victim shamed in a really, really bad way, pretty much kind of accused of making it up in order to have attention. And it was damaging to her, and it was damaging to me too. When you see your sister speak up and get spoken to by somebody who you view as a professional and get shamed, both of us kind of closed down, I think. So neither of us really shared a lot of details for a while. My parents knew that psychologist wasn't a good fit at all, and so they found one for our family that was a better fit, and he helped me a lot. He definitely helped me a lot, and I know that he's helped my family a lot, and I'm really grateful to him. And I shared some things with him, but I didn't really share a whole lot of details. I did always have memories of a certain extent of the ritual type thing having happened, but it didn't really come forward in a whole lot of detail until I was older, until I was in my 20s. And my, my situation was kind of similar to what other people who are mentioned in that Glenn L. Pace memo that you've talked about, that, people later in life have memories come forward. The difference for me, though, was I had memories come forward on my own. I only had hypnosis, or like recovered memory therapy, just one time with that same therapist who helped my family a lot. He tried doing hypnosis for me, and I kind of faked my way through the appointment, but it didn't work. Hypnosis didn't work. So I don't have recovered memory syndrome. I know I don't, because I didn't ever have, or whatever they call it, I'm not sure what they call it. I didn't ever have hypnosis, and I didn't ever really have, I didn't have anyone spoon feeding me details or anything. I just had things coming up more and more, especially after I had my own children, when it triggered memories coming forward, which I think is pretty common. Postpartum depression, I think, is part of that, but also a fear of our children being abused triggers our memory and subconscious. So I always remembered things of a ritualistic nature. I always had irrational fears of like being up in the canyon in the nighttime, like when I went camping with friends as a teenager. I remember being terrified that something was going to happen. I didn't ever say anything to any of them, but being really, really scared. In fact, I mean, this is kind of embarrassing, but there was one time we were out in a canyon situation when I was a teenager, and I was probably 16 or 17. And one of the boys that was friends with us, that came out of the woods to scare us, and I peed my pants in front of friends as like a 16-year-old girl. I mean, it was really embarrassing, but it literally scared the piss out of me, because I had been in situations at night in that same kind of area that were horrible and not safe, where really, really terrible things happened to me.
Yeah. So I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's this organization called the False Memory Foundation or organization. And essentially it's just these psychologists, this group of people that try to discount stories like yourself and say that people have, gone to see therapists, or the kids have been coached by their parents and false memories have been planted into their minds, and then they just repeat things that never happened to them. And it's a way to dismiss victims, unfortunately. But I wanted to key in on one other area. You mentioned the term a couple of times, satanic, when referring to this group, this cult that was doing the abuse with your grandfather to you and to other people. Could you tell us why you use that term or what you mean by it?
Sure. So it is satanic because they prayed to Satan in the rituals. And I was, you know, I was part of those rituals, and I was forced to pray to Satan as well. And the rituals, you know, the details of what happened in the rituals are really terrible. They're really demonic. It's awful. There were things, you know, torture, you know, not just abuse, but actual torture. And it's not my, I didn't, you know, it's not that I feel like it was dark and evil, so I call it satanic. It was satanic because they openly prayed to Satan.
Yeah, I appreciate you making that clear, Kate, because, you know, I think the term satanic, it gets thrown around a little bit too casually out there. You have in the corporate mainstream media people trying to discount and say that there's, you know, anybody who says that they were abused by a satanic cult or somebody praying to Satan is obviously crazy. And then you have people who I think say that about, they call everybody Satanists, and I don't think, you know, it's accurate, right? But in your case, you're saying these people literally were praying to Satan. So I just want to make that clear. I also do want to make the note that in the case against David Hamblin in 2012, not the current case, but the 2012 case, which was dismissed without prejudice in 2014, several of the victim's statements say that the abusers were praying to Satan or Lucifer. This is listed in the documents. You can see it a couple of different times. So I just want to put that on the table, and people can make of it what they will. Now, I wanted to ask, based on your experience growing up in the culture and in Utah and your family's history, do you think this type of abuse is just the case of a few bad apples in the LDS, or are you one of the people who believe that it is, you know, potentially rotten to the core, or this is part of the history of the church itself?
Well, I certainly don't think that all people in the LDS church have knowledge of this, or, you know, are involved in it. I guess the best way to explain it is that it was almost like a shadow organization of leaders of the church, who are also members and leaders of the satanic part of it. And I personally don't believe that it's just the Mormon church. I know it's hard to believe. It's like really out there, and it's just really hard to wrap your mind around, even for me who lived it. It's really hard to think that there's organizations going on in churches, in government, in entertainment. But I believe there are. I think there are satanic cults that the leaders of a lot of organizations, not just churches, are involved in.
Yeah, and you know, the research I've been doing over the last decade plus definitely shows that this isn't just a Mormon issue. I mean, in the last couple of years alone, I've seen reports on abuse within the Southern Baptist Church, the Jehovah's Witnesses. Obviously, the Catholics have an infamous history, and then now what we've learned over the last decades about the LDS. So it is institutions all over the world, and I really do think it's in the instance of how cults. And I really do think that it's similar to the way the Finders cult worked when I studied them, that, and many of these groups work, where they have an inner circle that knows what the real purpose of the organization is, and they have an outer circle that believes it's maybe for a totally different reason, right? And I think that's how a lot of these churches operate. But yeah, I just wanted to make that clear. And now we're going to start to wrap up here, Kate, and I do want to end on a more positive note, because I think the positive note is that you're coming forward, you're speaking up, and that's a great thing. So I want to end with that. But before we do, I just want to give you a chance. Is there anything else you'd like to say about your grandfather, the network of ritual abuse, just anything on that specifically?
You know, I think maybe just what I want to add is that I really do believe that some of the people who are involved in the satanic aspect of the LDS church, and also, you know, government and that sort of thing, that they are, I think some of them are involved in both of it, you know, like the light side and the dark side, and they are such fractured individuals from their the own abuse that they've suffered, and that's part of the like the programming that goes into this. They're such fractured individuals that they might be participating in this really dark and evil stuff, and they don't even know they're doing it. You know, they're not aware of that they're doing it. It's really tricky. It's hard to believe. It's very sensational. You know, the details of things that I was witness to are the kinds of things that your worst nightmares are made of. So I understand that people have a hard time wrapping their head around this. It's a lot. It's a lot. And it's, unfortunately, Derek, I kind of believe it's everywhere in the whole world.
It is a worldwide issue. You know, this is truly a worldwide phenomenon. And as I said, it's in different religions, it's in politics, it's in media, it's in Hollywood. And you can go back through history and see different, even Greek philosophers, you know, arguing for relationships that boy and adult love should be acceptable. And I think that was a culture, and obviously that we have the beginning of the Mormon church, we have the polygamy, which in many cases did yield itself towards child marriage. And I think that those sort of practices, though, just went more underground. It's not that they've disappeared totally. Now, some would say that they're starting to resurface, come back up ground, because you have this hypersexualization of children taking place, and some people attempting to get pedophilia as just like another sexual preference, and really disturbing things like that. So you can see this. This is a worldwide issue, but thankfully people like yourself are speaking up, Kay. And I just want to say to anybody out there who's hearing this, if you have a story to share, please do reach out to me, reach out to Kate. I can't promise that we can get accountability or justice in every area, but I do think that we can offer you a chance to share your voice. And there's lots of people who have been reaching out. I've been telling you this, Kay, that people have been reaching out and sharing their stories with me, even since your first interview. And I know more people will come out as your story reaches more people. So if you have something to share with me, reach out to me. I'll try my best to cover it and do it and give you a voice in whatever way I can. Okay, Kate, I'm going to throw it back to you, and just, you know, one more time, any message you might have, you know, this is your own experience. I know that you're not an expert in this, but you've been through this, and now you're coming forward, and your strength is helping you come out publicly and be a survivor and a whistleblower. So if you have any thoughts or advice to anybody out there who might have their own story and is thinking about coming forward, please feel free to share that right now.
Well, I think what I'd like to say to anybody who's suffering with memories of satanic ritual abuse, or anybody that's just been abused at all in any way, you know, particularly sexual abuse, because it is really insidious and it's really a problem. I want to tell them that you're not alone in your suffering, and that there's a lot more people who care than you think. And that we might feel like we're being judged. We might feel like, you know, especially in my case, I didn't speak up because I had so much shame. You know, I was raised in a culture that's really strong on purity and you know, keeping yourself pure for your spouse, for when you're married in the temple. And I felt like that I didn't want anybody to know, because I felt like I was dirty. I felt like I was stained. I felt like I was used goods, you know, and that's not true. That's not true for any of us. There's help out there. There's so many people like me. I really believe there's people all over the world like me who are doing their part to speak up about things. It's really hard. Honestly, this is one of the hardest things I've ever done. But it's very important. It's very important. It's important that we listen to one another, and that we're there for one another, and that we're compassionate. And I just want to remind people, you know, I was really, really scared, very scared to share this. And all I've gotten, you know, even from people who are still practicing members of the Mormon Church, and they feel defensive of the church. They don't, you know, and I understand why. They feel like I might be talking bad about the church. I'm not here to bash anyone. I'm really not. I'm just here to say you're not alone. We can talk about really hard things. And it's the only way, Derek, it's the only way that we're going to get to a place where we can stop ancestral abuse of this kind, where we can stop with our young people taking their own lives, where we can stop, with pervasive shame. And if we don't start talking about these really, really hard things, then institutions like government or like the Mormon Church or the Catholic Church, they're not going to change. They're not going to change how they handle abuse situations until they kind of feel some heat and they take a look and they go, you know, we really need to have some better training. We really need to start advocating and believing victims. We really need to stop protecting predators. We need to protect children at all costs. So that's why I'm doing that. And I just really, I want to thank you for listening, Derek, and for getting the word out there, because I just really appreciate you. And I want everyone to know that might be watching this, whether you know me or you don't, you're not alone. Please reach out. I will listen. Derek will listen. We'll help you find help. You're valuable. You're loved, and you can heal. I'm living proof. You can heal.
Very beautifully said, Kay, and I just appreciate you so much and your strength. And I'm going to echo that. Look, guys, if you have a story to share, once again, I'm going to say reach out to me. If you're ready to come forward, we will offer whatever we can to help you. This problem is not going to go away, just like any of the problems we're facing, if we do not speak up. And if we remain silent about what's taking place, then people like Kate won't come forward. Thankfully, Kate is coming forward, and I know more of you who have been abused have stories to share. I just hope that you can find the strength and the courage to do so. When you're ready, we'll be here for you. So thank you guys so much for listening. Until next time, remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Peace.